Is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Good afternoon, everyone. A warm welcome to all of you, and thank you for joining today's webinar on the Code on Wages. I am Deepak Arora. I am part of the NORSCOM policy team, and I look after the labor-related matters. I also have with me our knowledge partners, Nishit Desai Associates. We have with us Mr. Vikram Shroff, who has the HR law practice at Nishit Desai Associate. Vikram is joining us from Mumbai. Along with him, we also have with us Ms. Prita Suman, who is the leader of HR law at Nishit Desai. She is joining us from Bangalore. Welcome both of you. Now, before we begin, I'm sure all of you must be aware that recently the Code on Wages have been passed by both houses of Parliament. The Code has also received the assent from the President last month. The Code on Wages subsumes the law related to the Payment of Wages Act, Equal Remuneration Act, Payment of Bonus Act and Minimum Wages Act. With this, the Code on Wages has become the first code amongst the four labour codes that the government has promulgated, which has now been notified. The other three codes are still in discussion. While the effective date for various provision of the Code on Wages still needs to be notified, we believe it might be useful for industry to understand the various key provisions of the code and how it impacts the IT sector, which is again one of the largest employers in the country. So in today's webinar, we will be basically covering the key features of the Code on Wages, the compliances that the employers will be required to follow, the changes that have been made under the code from the existing laws of Minimum Wages, Payment of Wages Act, Equal Remuneration Act and Payment of Bonus Act, and of course the potential impact on the code upon the employers. We will also have a Q&A session towards the end of the webinar, and the presentation copy will also be shared with you later today. With this, I once again welcome all of you, and now I request Team Nishit Desai to take it forward from here. Thank you.
Unmuted.
Thanks, Deepak, for the introduction, and we are pleased to partner with NASSCOM for this webinar. My name is Vikram Shroff. And as Deepak mentioned, I lead the HR law team at Nishit Desai Associates. I'd like to thank Deepak especially for tracking the labor law developments in his capacity as the manager, government relations and public policy at NASSCOM. You know, as NASSCOM, the issues, the changes, the developments are being tracked quite closely for the benefit of its members, and that's something that is of immense help based on the feedback that we've got from quite a few of our clients. This could not be a more exciting time for employment lawyers like us, where we are seeing a significant amount of changes. The Code on Wages was something that was thought about a considerable time ago, and we are now starting to see it taking shape, just like some of the other codes. And over the next few years, we will see all the important central level labor laws to be codified. That's something that could be, you know, could end up to be a enormous change the way labor laws are viewed in the country. You have to appreciate that it is very difficult for any government to change labor laws, given that there are so many vested interests and so many stakeholders. But finally, we've seen the first code being enacted, the Code on Wages, and that's what our webinar is about. And hopefully, in due course, we will have the remaining three codes also be notified. So moving on to the second slide of our presentation, and as I just mentioned, that we are dealing with a plethora of labor laws in India, almost 44 central level labor laws and close to 100 state level labor laws. So it's obviously a chaotic for any employer to comply with all these laws. And with that thinking, we've finally seen the codification process started as recent as last month when the Code of Wages was enacted. All of this is helping from a compliance perspective, making it easier for employers to understand. They are able to make changes easily rather than trying to change each and every labor laws. It would eliminate multiple definitions under the labor laws. For example, who's an employee, who's a worker, how is wages defined. Each labor law has its own way of going about with it, and we are seeing different definitions come right from the Employees Compensation Act that was enacted in 1923 and it's still valid, to maybe the Payment of Wages Act as the last major central level labor law before in 1972, before the Sexual Harassment Act. So that phase saw a lot of labor laws being enacted, but everyone, you know, had their own set of definitions to deal with, its own set of compliances, and it kind of made life very difficult for employers. It also affected how India is viewed as by the World Bank in its ease of doing business rankings. Although over the last 3 years we've significantly grown in rankings, which basically is an agenda for the Modi government to continue to focus on. It also will help the labor authorities implement the laws more seriously, because we've had situations where there were several labor laws which were not being implemented the way it should be, and to that extent, you know, having limited amount of labor laws will make it easier for the labor authorities to implement. And with all that thinking and with all that background, we've seen the Code of Wages come up as the first in the series of four codes. We are now awaiting the effective date for application of the Code on Wages. So while the Code on Wages has become effective by way of a presidential assent last month, there will be another notification to make it effective, something that we don't know when that will happen, but hopefully in due course, and something that will be done along with the rules to the Code on Wages. We don't quite have the rules as yet drafted, so something that would be tied down together, and as soon as the rules are ready, you know, we will see an implementation date. It could be possible that different provisions of the code would have different effective dates. Again, we don't know how the government would go about making the code operational. Just like we saw in the Companies Act 2013, where different sections were implemented at different points of time, it could also be the similar case for Code on Wages, but we will only know once the rules have been drafted and, you know, the government's mindset in terms of going about with implementation of the code. Going on to the next slide is basically the evolution of the Code on Wages. The actual code that we are seeing now was drafted sometime in March 2015, and then it went through various courses, eventually got approved by the Lok Sabha, the Rajya Sabha, and the presidential assent was received, and it was published in the Official Gazette on August 8, 2019. But just as I said earlier, the thinking behind the code or codification of the labor law started much earlier, you know, almost in mid 2000s to late 2000s. So for us employment lawyers who are kind of tracking this, it's been quite a while since we've finally seen the codes the code legislated, but better late than never. As I said, it's almost impossible to try and change labor laws in a country like India. Going on to the next slide, slide number 4. So while the Code on Wages has been implemented, we will see three other codes come up in due course: the Code on Industrial Relations, the Code on Social Security and Welfare of Employees, and the Code on Occupational Safety, Health and Working Conditions. All of these together would replace most of the important central level labor laws. The state level labor laws remain untouched, and those would continue the way they are, but the central level labor laws would be codified and converted into these four codes. So something that you might want to keep a track of as we wait for the code on wages being implemented. Hopefully we might see some action on the other codes towards the winter session of the parliament, because the code on occupational safety, health and working conditions has already been introduced in the parliament. So we might see some activity there, you know, when we get back in the winter session. I am going to ask my colleague Preeta to talk specifically on what the code on wages means for the members of NASSCOM and what laws it is replacing, and some of the provisions. So she will spend the next 30 minutes or so going through various provisions, and then we will take on questions. So feel free to, you know, send in your questions to Deepak at NASSCOM should you have anything, and he will sort of collate it, and then we could look at it towards the end of our webinar. So over to you, Preeta.
So just before Preeta starts, just to clarify, so Preeta, 1 second, so maybe our participants can type in their questions in the chat box, which is available in this tool. We will take them towards the end of this webinar. Preeta, over to you.
Thanks, Deepak. Thanks, Vikram. All right, so to take the session forward, so like Vikram mentioned, now we will discuss the specifics of the code on wages. And in the next 20 to 30 minutes, we will speak about what are the key features under the wage code. At the same time, you know, you will also understand what the differences are when compared to the laws that are being replaced by the code on wages. And also, what are the key compliances for you as employers in terms of ensuring compliance with the wage code. So this is what we will broadly cover in the next 20 to 30 minutes. So to take it forward, like Vikram mentioned earlier, the code on wages is the first in the series of consolidation of Indian labor laws, right? So the code on wages looks at codifying three central level labor laws, which deal with subject matter relating to payment of wages, minimum wages, payment of wages to genders if the work that is being performed by them is of a similar nature, right? So to that extent, all aspects or all laws which relate to payment of wages and allied aspects are being clubbed together under one head under the wage code. So you can see in the slide over here which are the laws that are getting repealed by the wage code. Now, the wage code also clarifies that any action which is being taken under the above enactments, whether it be a notification, a nomination, appointment, order, or any direction that has been made under any of these repealed laws, or any amount of wages paid under these laws, will continue to be treated as done under the code on wages, unless and until it is contrary to the provisions of the wage code, and until such time that they are repealed by the provisions of the code or a notification in this effect is issued by the central government. So like Vikram mentioned earlier, the rules under the wage code are yet to come into effect. So naturally, there is going to be quite a bit of confusion in terms of how do you implement the provisions of the wage code, assuming that the effective date notification comes out soon. So to that extent, the repeal and savings clause under the wage code gives us an answer that to the extent that you are carrying out the provisions as per the repealed laws and they remain consistent with the wage code, they will be treated as the actions taken under the wage code.
So just to add to what Preeta said, you can't completely eliminate the existing four labor laws that would be replaced by the code on wages. So when it comes to interpretation, you will continue to refer to the laws and see if there are any contrary provisions in terms of any notifications or circulars that could continue to remain valid under the code, even though it might not have been specifically mentioned in the code. So it's something that from an interpretation perspective, you will still have to be aware of, you know, what were the notifications, orders and directions under the existing laws that have been replaced by the code on wages.
Right. So now just to give you a quick snapshot in terms of what is encompassed under the wage code. The wage code has been split into 9 chapters and 69 sections. So all the provisions relating to minimum wages, payment of wages, statutory bonus payments, and the provisions earlier contained under the Equal Remuneration Act have now been split and brought under different chapters of the wage code. So this gives you a quick snapshot on what are the subject matters under each chapter of the wage code. Now, discuss about the coverage and applicability of the wage code. Now, unlike the Payment of Wages Act, right, which applied only to factories and certain specified establishments like factories and so on and so forth, the new wage code will apply to all establishments, and the definition of establishment under the wage code is drafted in quite a wide manner to include all kinds of trade, business, manufacturing, all kinds of establishments engaged in such activities would get covered under the ambit of this law. And similarly, the Minimum Wages Act, which earlier applied only to scheduled employments, the employments that were specifically listed out in the schedule to the act, the provisions relating to payment of wages under the wage code, on the other hand, will apply to all employees irrespective of their wage ceiling as well as a type of employment. And also, one of the major objectives of the government while framing the code on wages was to ensure that the ambit of the law is widened to an extent that even unorganized sectors would get covered under the ambit of this law. So to put it in a nutshell, although the wage code has tried to simplify and codify the laws relating to these four subjects, at the same time, the government has tried to ensure that the benefits that are available to workers are not compromised, and at the same time, a larger group or a larger population of the workforce is covered under this law. Now, moving on to one of the most controversial aspects under the wage code, so to say, in terms that we as employment lawyers would refer to, and I'm sure most of you who must be dealing with labor laws would also be aware that every labor law in India, almost most of the labor laws, I would say, would contain a definition on wages, and the definition would vary from one legislation to the other, right? And to that extent, this also poses a lot of challenge for employers in terms of determining, okay, what are the wage components that need to be taken into consideration for each of these labor laws, right? For example, let's say even if an employee's monthly gross pay is 25,000 rupees and the Payment of Bonus Act applies only to those employees who draw wages within 21,000 rupees a month, just because your overall gross salary is 25,000 does not necessarily mean that you are excluded under the Bonus Act. Because of the fact that the components of your wages, when compared to the definition of wages under the Bonus Act, would probably exclude some components which are there in the CTC structure of the employer. So to that extent, even an employee whose gross salary may be 25,000 rupees could still get covered under the Payment of Bonus Act. However, the components that may be taken into consideration for the purpose of statutory bonus may not necessarily be the components that you have to take into consideration when you determine the wages for other labor laws, like, say, for example, the Provident Fund Law or the Minimum Wages Act for that matter, right? So because of the multiplicity of definitions and these definitions varying from one legislation to the other, this has posed a lot of practical challenges for employers, and this has been one of the key areas where the government has been looking at reforming labor laws in terms of ensuring that there is consistency across the board. So to that extent, we have a consolidated definition of wages under the wage code. Just to take you through the definition in a little more detail, the definition says that it includes all remuneration by way of salaries, allowances or otherwise, which are expressed in terms of money, which would, if the terms of employment be expressed or implied, be payable to a person employed in respect of his employment. And it specifically lists out the items which are included under the definition and includes basic pay, dearness allowance and retaining allowance. and specifically list out the exclusions that are there under the definition of wages. The table in front of you will give you a picture of what are the items that would get excluded under the definition of wages. These include statutory bonus, the contributions towards provident fund, value of any amenities that are being provided by the employer, conveyance allowance, traveling concession, the HRA, the amounts paid to employees to defray special expenses, remunerations that are payable under an award or settlement to the employee, overtime allowance, commission, gratuity, retrenchment compensation and other retirement benefits and ex gratia amounts that are paid to separating employees. All these are excluded under the definition of wages under the new wage code.
And just to add that the definition should always be seen as a double-edged sword, given that it has a list of inclusions and exclusions. So while on the one hand you would apply the definition to determine whether an employee is entitled to statutory bonus, you will also have to apply the same definition to determine what that amount of bonus will need to be, because bonus is to be paid on wages. So just as an example, if you've taken a particular interpretation to say that, well, this employee will be included for bonus or will be excluded, whatever it is, you will apply the same definition in terms of determining what that statutory bonus will be. You can't use another definition that suits your company. And we've had those kind of situations in the past where for the definition of eligibility for statutory bonus, you know, there were companies that referred to basic wages and therefore total wages to and thereby several employees were excluded. When they actually calculated bonus, they took only the basic wages and calculated the bonus accordingly. So you can't be having two separate interpretations for the same definition. The same would also apply in case of minimum wages. When the government comes up with a notification of what the minimum wages will be, you will apply the same definition that is in front of you to determine whether you're paying minimum wages to the employees, and all of these exclusions will in that context be excluded to basically determine whether you're paying minimum wages to your employees.
Right. Now, another interesting feature that has been introduced under the wage code is when it comes to wages of an employee, is to say that at least 50% of the total remuneration of an employee should necessarily constitute wages. Now, the reason probably why this has been added is because of the fact that now the law clearly sets out what are the exclusions under the definition of wages. So to that extent, any employer could probably misuse this provision and structure the CTC in such a manner that the exclusions are more than the inclusions. So to that extent, there could be a situation where the excluded wage components are significantly higher when compared to the included wage components. So keeping this in mind, the government has come up with a specific requirement to say that at least 50% of the total remuneration is supposed to be wages. And if the exclusions under the definition of wages in your CTC structure is going to exceed one half or such other percent as notified by the central government of the entire remuneration, then whatever amount exceeds such one half from the part of exclusions will be shifted towards the wages portion, right? And to explain this in little more detail so that you understand how this would work, we have put across a couple of case studies here. Of course, these are very, very basic CTC breakups, and I'm sure most of your organizations will have more exhaustive CTC components. But just to understand the concept, let's first go through the first case study. So here we have a CTC breakup which has three components in the salary. One, the basic. Two, the HRA. And three, the conveyance. Now, as we discussed in the previous slide, both HRA and conveyance are components that are excluded under the definition of wages. Now here, if you look at the quantum of the amounts, you will see that the amount which is included under the definition of wages, which is a basic component, is 5,000 rupees, and the excluded components is also 5,000 rupees. So, given that in this CPC structure, at least 50% of the total remuneration is being covered under wages, it should be fine to take into consideration only the basic for the purpose of determining the wages under the wage code. But let's look at few other examples, few other case studies, right? In the case study 2 here, you will see that the CTC breakup has HRA and conveyance amounting to 6,000 rupees, whereas the basic is only 4,000 rupees. Now, just because the HRA and conveyance are excluded components, you cannot take the view that 4,000 rupees is all that would be have to be taken into consideration for the purpose of wages under the wage code. Going by the principle that at least 50% of the total remuneration should be wages, in this case study as well, the wages for the purpose of the wage code would be rupees 5,000. Because the deficit 1,000 rupees will be moved from the exclusions towards the inclusion. Now let's look at the third case study here. So here we have a basic which is more than 50% of the total remuneration. It's about 6,500 rupees. And we have the exclusions amounting to 3,500 rupees. Given that the inclusion is more than 50% of the total remuneration, and given that basic is a component that needs to be included under the definition of wages, in this case study, the wages for the purpose of the wage code would be 6,500 rupees. So I hope these case studies give you adequate clarity in terms of how the wages would be computed for the purpose of the wage code.
And also, those members who are tracking the recent developments in relation to the law on Provident Fund, there is a similar proposal to include a to change the definition of basic wages, introduce a concept of wages, and add the fact that at least 50% of the total remuneration shall constitute wages for the purposes of Provident Fund Act. So the code on wages and which has already been enacted, and the proposed amendments to the Provident Fund, once that goes through, would in a way be consistent with the mindset that at least 50% of the total remuneration should be considered wages, irrespective of the of your CTC structure. And this is at least 50%. It can be higher, but it cannot be lower than 50%.
Okay, now to move forward with the next key feature under the wage code. The wage code distinguishes between an employee and a worker. Now, in most labor laws, you will see that there contains a definition for either employee or either worker or workman. But in the wage code, you will see definitions for both these terms. Now, obviously, I'm sure the next question is going to be, what is the purpose for having these two definitions, right? Now, the point is that although these two definitions have been included under the wage code, the term worker has very sparingly used in the wage code. And again, if you look at the difference in terms of an employee and a worker, an employee seems to be a much broader definition which includes everybody who is engaged to do any skilled, semi-skilled, manual, supervisory, managerial, administrative, clerical work. But a worker, on the other hand, excludes people who are in a managerial or administrative capacity. Ajay. And someone who is employed in a supervisory capacity drawing a monthly wage exceeding 15,000 rupees. So like I said earlier, the definition of worker has been very rarely used in the wage code, and specifically in relation to provisions that relate to payment of minimum wages. So we will...
Preeta, are you there?
Clarity once the rules are out to understand what exactly is the these two different other specifics of the Equal Remuneration Act. Like most of you may be aware, the Equal Remuneration Act was a law which, or probably I would say, the only law which prohibited discrimination in matters of employment. Under this law, right, employers were prohibited from discriminating against men and women in situations where they were performing the same or similar kind of work. You will find the similar kind of provisions contained under the wage code as well, except for the fact that instead of specific references to discrimination between men and women workers, the code on wages prohibits discrimination on the grounds of gender. So to that extent, we, and probably this could be in light of the scrapping away of Section 377, it tries to recognize the fact that, you know, any sort of gender-based discrimination needs to be prohibited in all matters of employment, whether it be in terms of payment of wages, or even when it comes to recruiting of an employee, or even in terms of implementing all other terms and conditions of employment. So this is the major difference that is there between the Equal Remuneration Act and the Wage Code, basically to eliminate the specific reference to men and women workers and prohibit discrimination on the grounds of gender. Now, in terms of what do you mean when we say same work or work of a similar nature? Again, this definition was contained under the Equal Remuneration Act as well. But you can see in the slide here, some pointers have been highlighted in red bold fonts, because these are the aspects that have undergone a change in the definition of same work or work of a similar nature under the wage code. It introduces the concept of experience also, which needs to be taken into consideration in determining whether the work is of a similar nature. And like I said earlier, the references to men and women have been replaced by the reference to any gender. Another interesting feature under the wage code when it comes to the provisions relating to equal remuneration is that although the wage code provides for a definition of wage and excludes certain components, this chapter under the wage code specifically states that some of the items that are excluded under the definition should be taken into consideration for the limited purpose of computing equal wage to all genders. And those components that need to be taken into consideration are the conveyance allowance, travelling concession, HRA, remuneration payable under any award or settlement or by a court or tribunal, and overtime allowance. So although these items are excluded under the definition of wages, for the purpose of provisions relating to payment of wages and minimum wages under the code, in terms of the provisions relating to equal remuneration, these items will have to be taken into consideration while computing the wages. Now, moving forward to the next segment, which relates to payment of minimum wages. Now, again, the provisions relating to payment of minimum wages largely remain the same when compared to the 1948 law. But unlike the Minimum Wages Act, which had specified employments listed out in the schedule to the Minimum Wages Act, the wage code will apply to all establishments irrespective of their nature of business and activities. One new feature that has been introduced when it comes to minimum wages is the new concept on floor wages. Now, as most of you may be aware, the state governments are the appropriate governments who have been issuing the minimum wages notifications from time to time, which would apply to employers in the respective states. To that extent, the central government had little say when it came to deciding upon the minimum wages payable to employees in each state. However, recognizing the fact that there needs to be some sort of a uniformity or some sort of a guiding principle for the states to arrive at those figures, the wage code now introduces a concept of floor wages, which basically means that the central government will take into consideration the minimum living standards of workers as well as the geographical areas. They will consult with the central advisory board, which is appointed under this law, and arrive at a floor wage, which will have to be kept as a reference point by all the state governments while framing the minimum wages in the respective states. Now, the wage code also clarifies that the minimum wages which are prescribed by the state governments cannot be lesser than the floor wage which is prescribed by the central government. And in a situation where, say for example, the minimum rates of wages fixed by the state government higher than the floor wage which is going to be prescribed by the central government, then the state governments cannot reduce the minimum wages just because the floor wage which has been provided by the central government is a lesser amount. So that's something that you will have to take note of.
Again, a good and bad kind of a situation where the central government will retain some control over the minimum wages in terms of the floor rate. But unfortunately, in a highly diverse country like India, it's almost impossible to come up with a floor rate that would in a way apply across the country. And I think there's going to be some challenges and some confusion in terms of implementing the minimum wage rates, because the central government would want to come up with a slightly higher and a more realistic minimum wage rate and not leave the discretion entirely to the state government. The state government can increase but not reduce. So I think it will become a challenge to come up with what that rate should be for different industries and different skill sets. But at the end of the day, this is one way for the central government to retain control over the minimum wage rates and not let it be entirely at the state government's discretion.
Okay, moving forward, now we'll discuss about the provisions relating to payment of wages, which was earlier contained under the Payment of Wages Act of 1936. We'll discuss specifically the aspects that have changed under the wage code. So there is a new clause which talks about the mode of payment of wages, which enables employers now to make payments through electronic mode. The provisions also fix the wage period that the employer needs to follow, and it specifies that the wage period cannot exceed 1 month. So you cannot have a system where you pay employees every 3 months or every quarter or so on and so forth. The maximum that you can have, the wage period that you can have, is a 1 month duration. There is a new clause which talks about the time limit for payment of wages for various categories of employees. So if it's an employee engaged on a daily basis, it has to be at the end of the shift. If it's on a weekly basis, it has to be on the last working day of the week. If it's on a fortnightly basis, then before the end of the second day after the end of the fortnight. And if it's a monthly basis, then before the expiry of the seventh day of the succeeding month. The law also provides for the time limit for payment of wages for a separating employee. Although the 1936 law also contained a similar provision, the portion that is highlighted in red in the slide here is an addition to the provision, which basically means that now if any employee resigns from employment, you will have to ensure that the wages that are payable to the employee are paid within 2 working days from the last day of employment. And as most of us must be aware, in terms of market practice, the practice is to pay or settle the full and final payments along with the next payroll. But with this new provision, we will have to ensure that even in case of resignations and not just in case of terminations or closure of establishment, the wages payable to the separating employee will have to be made within 2 working days.
Yeah, the only exception would be gratuity, where you can wait for 30 days from the date of resignation to pay. As per the existing Payment of Gratuity Act, we don't know what will happen when it's codified. But other than that, now even in case of resignation, you can no longer wait for your next payroll to complete the final payments. You will have to make the payment by the end of the second working day.
Right. Now, to move forward, the Payment of Wages Act, which contained provisions on permissible deductions, you will see the same provision incorporated under the wage code as well. There are specific grounds listed basis which deductions can be made from the wages of an employee, which is consistent with what was there under the 1936 law. But few points to be kept in note is that not more than 50% of an employee's total wages in a wage period can be deducted. So say, for example, the employee's monthly wage is 10,000 rupees, you cannot be deducting more than 5,000 rupees, even if they are authorized deductions under the wage code. But of course, if they are authorized deductions, then the rules which are yet to come out will prescribe the manner in which you can recover such excess amounts. So that is something that is provided under the wage code. Now, moving forward with the provisions relating to payment of bonus, again, these the provisions that were contained under the 1965 law largely remain consistent. The provisions relating to payment of statutory bonus will apply only to those establishments that employ at least 20 employees, or there should have at least been 20 employees on any day in the relevant accounting year. In only those circumstances will the POBA apply to the employer. The quantum of payment of bonus also continues to be the same, which will be in the range of 8.33% to 20% of the employee's wages. There are, of course, some changes in terms of the manner of calculation of bonus, which is again dependent on the allocable surplus and the gross profits of the employer. Without delving into too much of those details, we will focus on what specifically could be of an impact to the employer from a bonus law perspective. As most of you may be aware, there was a provision contained under the Bonus Act which talked about disqualification for bonus, basically situations in which an employee would be disqualified from receiving statutory bonus. You will see that under the wage code, a new category has been included, which is basically that if an employee is being dismissed from service for conviction for sexual harassment, even in those cases, the employee can be disqualified from receiving statutory bonus. Now, to move forward in terms of the other key features, so now we've already covered the provisions relating to payment of wages, the minimum wages, the statutory bonus, as well as equal remuneration. Now we are getting into the softer aspects of the law. We will see that under the wage code, it provides for appointment of an inspector cum facilitator. Now, this is a concept that we have been noticing in most of the new labor laws that are coming out and some of the amended labor laws as well. In fact, even under the new shops and establishments law in Maharashtra, there is a concept of inspector cum facilitator. The idea basically to have this kind of terminology is that, as the name suggests, of course, the idea is not just to inspect establishments and, you know, slap notices on them. The idea is to facilitate compliance. So to that extent, the Code on Wages introduces certain provisions which requires the inspector cum facilitator to work alongside with employers to enable them to comply with the provisions of the law. And at the same time, the law also clarifies that the inspector cum facilitator cannot initiate any prosecution unless and until the employer has been given an opportunity to rectify such non-compliance. And again, if it is a repeated offense, then obviously that kind of a leverage will not be available. But otherwise, these are some provisions that have been incorporated to enable employers to comply with the provisions of the code. Now, in terms of the offenses and penalties, as well as the limitation period under the law, I would say that the offenses and the corresponding degree of penalties have been substantially increased. Probably even 10 times when compared to what the earlier penalties were. An interesting feature that is there is that the code has decriminalized all offenses except those offenses which are repeat offenses. However, the monetary penalty has been significantly enhanced, and the maximum imprisonment provided under the code is 3 months and or with a fine which may extend up to 1 lakh rupees. Again, the imprisonment provision, like I mentioned earlier, would apply in situations where it is a repeated offense. In addition to the same, if any claim is made by an employee under the code, like say for example saying that I have not been paid my due wages or I have not been paid statutory bonus, the authority under the code on wages will determine the claim, and it can even order a compensation amount to be payable by the employer, which could be up to 10 times the claim determined. So that is something that could be of a significant monetary impact for the employers. In addition to the same, the law also introduces a provision on compounding of the first offense, which basically means that without going through the lengthy court proceedings, the employers can settle the matter basically by petition, right? Now, in terms of the limitation period, Earlier, while employees could raise claims only from between 6 months to 2 years from the date on which the claim had arisen, now the court does provide for a 3-year window from the date on which the claim has arisen. So that way, the limitation period for raising claims has been enhanced under the Wage Code. There are also certain miscellaneous provisions under the Wage Code, say for example, provisions which deal with death of an employee, which requires employers to pay amounts payable to the employee to the person so nominated. And if there is no nomination in this respect, then the dues are supposed to be deposited with the authority as prescribed under the rules. In terms of compliances for employers, again, the law prescribes the returns, records and notices that need to be maintained. They have largely consolidated the registers and returns that were supposed to be maintained under the four labor laws that have been repealed. And to that extent, the compliances are going to be much lesser. So there is a requirement to maintain a register which will have details of the persons employed, the muster roll and other details. There's also a requirement to display a notice with the provisions of the code on wages. Category-wise wage rates of the employees, the wage period, so on and so forth, and also the details of the inspector cum facilitator needs to be provided. There is also a requirement to issue wage slips to employees. Again, the format will have to be prescribed under the rules which are yet to be released. So these are some of the key provisions that are there under the law.
And if I may just
that employees will have to take note of.
Yeah, and if I may just add to that, yeah, if I may just add to that, in the sense that if you believe that the code will be a transformational change in terms of how employers will do business in India, then maybe that's not the case, because the way the code has come up is largely, putting four labor laws into one labor law rather than really trying to look at it on merits and whether several of the provisions are sort of needed. So there are some concerns, and there were some industry associations that went back to the government quite strongly to evaluate whether the court could actually be seen as a true reform rather than simply a consolidation of four labor laws. But this is what we have. We could always criticize or sort of comment upon it, but at the end of the day, it is at least a start in terms of trying to align and consolidate the labor laws and make life easier. The court does have its concerns in terms of not differentiating between different types of employers, small, mid-size, big, employers in different industries and different types of setup in different regions. So in a way, they are all looking at it from one law perspective. For example, when we spoke of the minimum wage, they had a schedule of employment to which it applied, and there were rates for each type of employment. We might not see that happening under the code. There was a lot of hope that the definition of wages would be simplified, but that's also not the case. It's still a complex definition, although they have put the threshold of 50%, so that is a guiding factor, but it's still a complicated wages. It doesn't quite help from a ease of doing business perspective, and you will continue to see innovative CTC structures being used by employers given the detailed definition that we have on wages. The law misses out on performance-based bonus. It continues with a statutory bonus. So irrespective of whether an employee has performed or not, he is still entitled to receiving bonus if certain conditions are complied with in terms of the employer having a certain allocable surplus. The mindset is that it's not really a bonus, but just a 13th month salary, as we would look at it, a deferred salary, if I may say so, rather than purely a bonus, because bonus is really to those employees who've performed as per the employer's expectations. Yes, I would agree that the anti-discrimination provisions changing from protecting only females to a gender-based system is a great move. But I think we've lost the opportunity to look at some of the other criteria on which employees could be discriminated, And to that extent, India remains quite backward when you talk of some of the developed countries like US and Europe in terms of discrimination protection. We were hoping that there would be clauses in terms of clawback of any sort of bonus or any retention payout or something that employers would have paid for any misconduct happening in the future or any breach of policies, but we didn't see any clawback clauses, something that we continue to include in the contracts, but we don't have the support of laws. The onus or the burden of proof has shifted largely to the employer in terms of any claim that the employee or a trade union member on behalf of an employee makes. So again, from a litigation perspective, you know, the employer will have to really defend its position well than, you know, what the scenario was under the existing laws. And finally, limitation period of 3 years. Yes, it is consistent with the Limitation Act of India, but when it comes to labor laws, you know, to have such a long limitation period is not something that is really the need of the hour. In fact, there is also a limitation period of 5 years being proposed under the Provident Fund Act, which we believe is quite a long period. You know, you are really looking to give the opportunity to employees to litigate early on and not wait till, you know, towards the end of 3 years to sort of litigate in terms of their rights. So these are some points that we felt could have been better addressed by the code in terms of the need of the hour and in terms of how India is shaping up. But the fact of the matter is that we have this code that we will have to deal with, and we will have the rules which we will have to study closely to learn and ensure that we are able to implement. I will have Preeta. So we've been getting some questions, so I'll have Preeta talk about some of the questions that we've been getting quite regularly from our clients on the code. So we've tried to consolidate the questions. We have some limited time at our disposal, so we'll use the time to kind of talk about some of those questions that we have been receiving. But in the meantime, if you have any additional questions, please feel free to send that to Deepak. So over to you, Preeta.
Sure. Okay, so just to take you through some of the questions that we've been receiving, we hope this addresses some of the questions that you have. Do employers need to start complying with the code on wages now? The answer is no, because the effective date of the code on wages is yet to be notified. So to that extent, the core laws, the Minimum Wages Act, Payment of Wages Act, Equal Remuneration Act, as well as the Bonus Act of 1965 will continue to apply. But once the effective date notification is out, you will have to start complying with the provisions of the wage code, irrespective of whether the rules are notified simultaneously or not. But again, if there's any confusion in terms of how you would implement some of the provisions of the wage code, like I mentioned in the initial segment of the presentation, to the extent that you have taken actions under the earlier laws, to the extent that they are not inconsistent with the wage code, you can continue the same practice until such time that the rules come out. Is there a significant difference in the definition of wages when compared to the earlier laws? Well, I would say that there has been some sort of difference in terms of the definition of wages. Some components which were earlier included now are excluded under the definition of wages. Like, say, for example, under the Minimum Wages Act, although HRA was included earlier, now it has been excluded. If you look at the Payment of Wages Act and the wage code, you will see that several items that were included earlier have now been excluded. Like, say, for example, payments that are being made under a agreement between the employee and the employer by way of a settlement or so on and so forth. Those kind of payments are also excluded under the definition of wages. So frankly, it's not like a very, very significant difference. But of course, there are items that were earlier included which are now excluded, and items that that could possibly pose a challenge based on your CTC structure. So this is something, an analysis that you will have to do on a case-by-case basis. Moving to the third question, will the central government now fix the minimum wages for all establishments? So like I said, the appropriate government under the law will fix the minimum wages for all establishments for the purpose of central undertakings and mines and plantations and establishments as those. The central government will continue to issue the minimum wages. But again, the central government will issue a floor wage, which will have to be followed by the central governments while coming up with the minimum wages for the respective states. But in terms of all private sector establishments, it will be the state governments that will come up with the minimum wages. Are employers required to reevaluate their existing wage structures? Once the wage code comes into effect, yes, employers will need to reevaluate their existing wage structures to ensure whether the payments that are being made by them are consistent with the new definition. Like the example of the payment of bonus that I had discussed earlier, although you may have been excluded from the definition, from the requirement to pay statutory bonus based on the previous definition of wages, there could be a situation where based on the current definition, you may get covered under, may get covered for the purpose of statutory bonus contributions, and likewise under the other laws as well. Does the code on wages have any impact on provident fund contributions? Well, the code on wages looks at compiling four other labor laws. It does not consolidate the law relating to provident fund. Provident fund is something that will get covered under the code on social security. So that is something that will have to be looked upon eventually when the code on social security becomes effective. But in the meanwhile, and like Vikram mentioned earlier, the Provident Fund Act of 1952 is also now proposed to be amended to bring the definition of wages in line with the definition that is there under the Code on Wages. So if that does happen, then the consistent definition will have to be used for the purpose of Provident Fund as well. Is there any change in the law relating to working hours, overtime, holidays for IT/ITES companies? Well, there isn't any change in the law per se, but again, the rules under the wage code are yet to prescribe the working hours for a day. The overtime has still been prescribed as, how the overtime wages needs to be computed is covered under the wage code, which is consistent with the previous law. But otherwise, these are aspects that will find more clarity in the rules. And also, as establishments governed by state-specific laws, and speaking from a commercial establishment perspective, the State-Specific Shops and Establishments Act will also govern aspects relating to working hours, overtime and holidays for IT/ITES companies, which you will have to comply with simultaneously with the wage code provisions. And the registers under the Code on Wages is being maintained in electronic format. Well, the wage code does not specify this explicitly, but again, the government is coming up with a web-based inspection scheme where employers will have the ability to submit documents on through an electronic mode. So to that extent, we would expect the rules to come under the wage code to provide some clarity in this respect, and we would expect that this should be possible under the new law. How should the statutory bonus be calculated in the absence of a notification of the wage threshold? So as of now, the wage threshold notification is not yet out. So whatever is the current wage threshold, which is basically 21,000 rupees, will continue to apply until such time that the wage threshold is further enhanced or revised. Is compounding possible after prosecution has been initiated under the wage code? Now, the wage code specifically clarifies that compounding would be possible even if a prosecution has been initiated. There are certain processes that will have to be followed in doing so, which will be prescribed under the rules. And once the compounding is done, then the authorities who are in charge of such compounding will inform the court in terms of the fact that the prosecution has to be sidelined and the matter has been compounded. So compounding would be possible even if a prosecution has been initiated. But like I said earlier, compounding is possible only for those offences which are not repeat offences, and for those offences which do not have imprisonment as a punishment. The last and final question, what would be the immediate action items for ITITS companies once the wage code has been notified? Like we discussed earlier, the first point would be to go back and check your wage structures. Check what are the components in your PTC structure which are likely to fall under the definition of wages. And accordingly, you will have to revise your practices of making statutory bonus, minimum wages, so on and so forth. So that will be the first exercise that you will have to undertake and see where you stand in terms of your compliance and whether any actions need to be taken to ensure compliance with the wage code from a payment of wages perspective. Secondly, like we mentioned earlier, there are quite a few compliances in terms of the notices, registers, returns that need to be filed. The details will of course come out once the rules are out. So that is something that you will have to follow once the wage code has come into effect. So these are some of the questions that that we've received from time to time. I know there are a couple of other questions that have also come up. But you, because of the lack of time, maybe we'll have to just wind up now. I will probably just hand it over to Deepak now for the conclusion remarks and take it forward from there.
Yeah, and before we hand it over to Deepak, we just wanted to let you know that we've issued a legal alert to our clients on the code on wages. So if you would like a copy, you might just reach out to Deepak and he'll be happy to share the link with you.
Alright, so thank you Vikram, thank you Prita for a detailed overview and sharing your insight with us. Unfortunately, due to the paucity of time, we will have to close here. As mentioned in the beginning, we will upload the copy of the presentation on our community webpage. We will share the link with all of you on an email and we hope that you found today's webinar informative and useful. Do write to me at deepak@nascom.in in case you have any feedback or suggestions for Nascom. With this, I wish you all a pleasant evening ahead. Thank you. Goodbye. Thanks, Vikram.
Thank you.
Pita, and thanks, everyone. Thanks.
Thank you.
Deepak? Deepak, are you there? Phone karna hai.